Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star. And we've got Steve Phillips coming up later in the hour. The Blue Jays walking off the Yankees earlier this afternoon. Bo Bichette, the second home run of the day. And he walks off, and he said after the game, he feels like he's coming alive. You know, he was kind of grinding earlier in the season, which he was, you know, the whole team, really. It still is early in the season. But the bats, you know, three of the last four games, outside of them facing Gerrit Cole a couple of nights ago, their bats have come alive here, which is what you needed and which is what you expected. And Ryu was exceptional again last night. That's three times through the rotation. He's given you exactly what he gave last year. And it's just about the other arms. You know, they're dealing with a lot of injury list issues. You know, Julian Merriweather went back on there today, which has been consistent throughout his career. He's always running into injury problems. Yes. Ross Stripling was a late scratch. He was supposed to start this afternoon. He came out. He's got forearm stiffness, so who knows what that means.
Well, that forearm tightness can be – that's concerning because that's often a means a trip to Dr. Andrews and you know where after that. That's not. Let's hope it's not that.
Yeah, but generally speaking, when you get there, you look back on it, and it started with forearm stiffness.
Yeah, exactly.
Or an elbow issue or whatever. But
given, you know, given the laundry list of injuries, Hayes, like, you know, from George Springer on down, and of course we haven't seen Toronto's big signing, George Springer, yet, and it was a bit disconcerting today to hear Charlie Montoya say that they don't expect to see him anytime soon as he's staying in Dunedin as the Jays move on to Kansas City. Given all the kind of the dark clouds of injuries over this team, the fact that they're 6-6, they've played half their games against the Yankees so far, and the Yankees are 5-7. It's not a bad start.
No, it's actually a very good start considering everything that you just laid out. Springer has not played. They've had injury problems. Nate Pearson obviously has not been available to them either. Kirby Yates was supposed to be basically the anchor of the staff, at least out of the bullpen, and he never threw a pitch during the regular season because of Tommy John. Thomas Hatch is a guy I think they had some hopes for, maybe being a rotation guy, certainly an arm out of the bullpen. He has not been available to them either. And, you know, there's selective positions that aren't giving them much offense. The catching position in particular, Kirk hit a bomb today. Finally, he was 0 for 13 before that home run. But Kirk and Jansen bringing nothing. Teoscar Hernandez is now the COVID IL list, but he struck out 14 times in 29 plate appearances. So not getting much out of him. You mentioned Rowdy, who's starting to put it together a little bit the past couple of days, a couple of hits, but not much out of Rowdy. It's like a handful of guys. And Ryu's doing what he's doing. A couple of bullpen players that are doing what they're doing, and they're 6-6. I think if you're Montoya, you're happy with that. You should be happy with
that. Yeah, Teoscar Hernandez on the COVID list. I mean, the list is long. And then you can look at, like, because you had to start Zoik today, you may have to go back to Tanner Roark.
Yes, Tanner Roark. He may be on the mound tomorrow night. I think Montoya said before the game it's either him, maybe Anthony Kay.
Anthony Kay is another option.
Maybe they'll do like a bullpen, like an opener or something like that. But who are you relying on as an opener tomorrow night in Kansas City? I don't know.
And that's the thing.
The Royals aren't much of a team. You should be able to put something together here. You could go with Matz on regular rest, I believe. Like they might move Matz up. He's supposed to pitch the second game of the series on Friday, but you could potentially move him up on regular rest. But I don't know. We'll see.
They got a bunch of off days coming up too, which I think is a good thing. Good time to have. I think they got four off days in the next couple of weeks, which is a good time to have them if you got a few injury issues.
Yeah, they got to get through this run, right? They got four at Kansas City, two at Boston, and then three at Tampa, and then you're right. Then they're going to have some time off, and I think they've got some time off in between the Boston and Tampa series as well. So I think you know, bookending the Rays series, they come home against Washington. They're going to have a few days off over the course of like a week. So you got to grind here. You got to get your wins at a team like Kansas City and at Boston, who's off to a decent start, but I don't think they're that good of a team, not expected to be this year. So if you can just keep chugging, you know, you get out of April with all these issues and how they've played and how the bats have been cold. You get out of April at .500, you're fine. You're fine.
You get
Springer back, which eventually he's going to come back. You know, you get Pearson involved. You get a couple of other arms that are on the IL at this point. Hernandez comes back off the COVID IL. You're fine. You'll take .500 right now. You know, so I think
they're saying Springer Springer's on a running program now. He's got the quad issue. He's going to be doing some of that stuff in playing the simulated games in Dunedin. And hopefully, yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, it always does sound a little ominous when they say we don't expect them back anytime soon. Maybe that's just a turn of phrase. Maybe he'll be back in a couple weeks. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, and I don't believe he's, again, even traveling on this roadie. And it's going to take them – it's about a 10-day road trip. That's – you know, do the math on that. He's not going to be playing on that. That's the better part of, what, 9 games? So you're looking at upwards of 24, 25 games before you really even start talking about Springer being a part of your program, which is a terrible start. It sucks. There's not much you can do about it, but not the best way to ease into a new situation here. But team stays afloat, and it's all good. So we'll catch up with Steve Phillips later in the hour, get his take on that. Some news here with the Leafs. Nick Robertson has been placed on the COVID list for the Leafs. Don't have any clarity on why that's the case, but he was with the Marlies as of 3 or 4 days ago, and the whole Marlies team has been shut down due to a COVID scare or concern over COVID. So maybe we can, you know, connect the dots on that. But COVID is lurking, man. It's all over the city, and it's kind of lurking around this team. It feels that way. To chat about it, we're joined now by our TSN Hockey insider, Darren Dreger. What do you make of this story with Robertson and what's going on with the Marlies and how it pertains to the Leafs?
Yeah, well, look, I think you've summarized it beautifully. I don't think there's any way to disconnect the two, right? You know, because of what's gone on in the American League with the Toronto Marlies, close contact tracing, all of those things that every team has to go through with the NHL and the Players Association when you've got at least one false positive until they know it's a false positive or a positive test. I mean, this is just part of the logistics and the protocols that the National Hockey League deals with on a day-by-day basis. I mean, they're dealing with it today with Colorado too, right? Right. I think it's Grubauer is on the COVID list, but I'm told from an NHL source that the Colorado game will go on as scheduled tonight. So we'll see there. And I'm sure that the due diligence is still being done specific to the Maple Leafs, Nick Robertson, the Marlies, and all of that. But I don't have the sourcing direct from either the Leafs or the NHL, but because of just common sense and what we've experienced to this point in dealing with NHL cases and issues, I'm going to make an assumption that I think is a fair one, that it's close contact that has Robertson in protocol.
So, Dregs, when you look at it, I mean, these things are popping up a little more than the NHL would like, obviously. The situation in Vancouver is about as bad as it can get, and it's ugly. What do you think the odds are? I mean, if you're just kind of spitballing, the odds are that we're going to have to go to some kind of bubble model to get the Stanley Cup awarded when it all comes down to it.
Yeah, I that's obviously not going to be a scenario that would be considered scenario A or B from an NHL perspective, because it's about grabbing hold of any sort of revenue stream that you possibly can. So there aren't going to be fans in Canada. I think that's foregone conclusion. Certainly, like, I mean, can any of us envision fans in Ontario?
No chance.
Maybe even to start the season? Like, all kidding aside. Like, until we're vaccinated, and God knows when that's going to happen here. No sense ripping the scab off that wound. But so in saying that, I think that the better scenario would be for the National Hockey League to look at whoever wins North Division, set them up in an American venue, go through the quarantine, whatever you have to do to get safe. And then that team, those players, everybody involved just stays there until they've been eliminated or they've hoisted a Stanley Cup and they just keep marching through. It's far from a perfect situation, but I just don't see any other way. Now, if there's risk in whatever city that were to take place, or if the risk develops further between now and the end of the regular season or round one of the playoffs or round two, when you've got to really make that decision, then I suppose a hybrid or a bubble could be considered. But I don't get the sense from NHL officials that they expect that. They have to put these teams in a safe environment, but the best case scenario is a safe environment where you can put a good percentage of fans in the building to get the revenue streams flowing.
With Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey insider, I just read a quote, I think, from JT Miller chatting with Farhan Lalji, and JT Miller's basically saying in Vancouver, do you really expect us to bring much to the table? Like, I'm reading between the lines here.
Yeah.
But they're going to get one practice in a pregame. They're likely going to be shorthanded based on the COVID list alone. And their season's over anyway. It was over before the shutdown. This, I don't, like, what can we expect for 19 games out of this Vancouver team?
Well, not much, Brian, obviously. But the fact that that organization is, scramble isn't the right word, because they're so out of gas that they can't even scramble. You know, to expect that that team is going to ice a lineup on, what, Friday? I mean, that just is mind-boggling to me, because I followed that story very closely. And it was an experience for me as a reporter. I don't lean too heavily on the opinion of social media, especially when you're dealing with impeccable sources and facts. But it got to a point where it was almost dangerously comical, if that even makes sense, where people were just, come on, these guys have the flu. They didn't have the flu. There were some of these guys that were really sick, right? And now you fast forward, and the players are coming through the other side of it now, as we realize today, with a number of the Canucks players being taken off the COVID list. But you've got, there are pregnant wives that were impacted, children that were impacted. Like, the physical wear and tear is obvious. The emotional wear and tear on that group is probably immeasurable. Right. So now, you know, and we're not that far removed from it being a very scary situation. But because the integrity of the regular season, the influence of those games potentially on the other teams and then the individuals, you know, variety of different, scoring races and all of those things, I guess the NHL just felt like, you know, as soon as it is physically safe to do this, we have to do it. But Brian, to your point, I mean, how can this team be expected to compete at the level that they're going to have to compete? They came off their break and got slapped sideways by COVID and variant strains. And so imagine what their first couple of games are going to look like. It's going to be horrendous. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be almost unfairly ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm bracing for.
Yep.
I think everyone's bracing for the same thing.
I'm surprised.
No, it's scary. I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry,
go ahead.
It is. It is scary. It's a health and safety issue for a team. If you're an agent for one of those guys or a loved one of one of those guys, and they're expected to go out there and play NHL hockey after sitting on the sidelines this long and only getting one practice and one morning skate, that strikes me as a health issue.
Well, and furthermore, you know, there were players, Vancouver Canucks players, that were diagnosed a while back with COVID-19 and then got the variant strain. So they've been down this road twice. So, I mean, is it inconceivable to think that it couldn't happen again? Like, if not to those players, then to those. And I just can't put myself in a, like, I'll bring it into my own selfish, tiny little world. I mean, I had a choice to make for Monday's trade deadline. Do I go in studio, which, Brian, you were there, it was incredibly safe. I fully trusted TSN and Bell in managing it, but there's risk, right? And how you deal with risk is a very selfish and individual decision that needed to be made. Now, for reasons, you know, in my own home, I decided that my safest option was to take advantage of the great home studio that TSN has afforded me, and we did trade deadline from there. But that's me living in my own little world. So now magnify that times whatever when you're a young world-class athlete, you've been buckled by it, and now your wife has it and your kids have it. Like, I mean, I just can't imagine the mental stress that collective group has been through. So I wish them well, obviously we all do. But for me, hockey should be the last thing that the Vancouver Canucks should be worrying about.
Yeah, I would love to be a fly on the wall with American players up here, especially on these on teams like Ottawa and Vancouver who are out of it.
Yeah.
I'm almost surprised that we haven't heard of families saying, we're going down to the States, we can get vaccines down there. Like, we'll see you later. Mm-hmm. Or even players, I wouldn't even be shocked. If it didn't, it would go so against the culture of, you know, team and we're in it. I'm not going to bail on you guys. But there's American players up here that if they were back home, they'd be living a very different lifestyle. And they'd have access to something that we don't up here. They can't get up here. And I'm almost surprised that hasn't happened, Dregs, where a player's not been like, guys, I'm going down. I'll come back up and quarantine for 7 days. But I'm bringing my family down there, kids down there. This is what we're doing.
I mean, it has to be considered, Brian. Like I think of Blake Wheeler with the Winnipeg Jets, who's out with concussion issues, right? And the good news is he's getting better. Here's an American guy who is a highly educated individual. He's got a young family in Winnipeg, and Western Canada is feeling it the same way we are in Ontario. There's no way that he isn't sitting and stressing over this, particularly when you're going through your own physical issues and you're not in the team environment, you're not playing, and you don't have that distraction. So that's an excellent point.
Yeah. Well,
Dregs, we were sifting through some of Hazy B's former hot takes earlier in the show. And one of them was I thought it was a really good Hazy B hot take. It was, you know, when you look back at the 2015 draft, obviously Connor McDavid is the king daddy of that one. It's never going to change. But the number two pick, Jack Eichel, and the number four pick, Mitch Marner, between those two guys, Hazy B's take was Marner's turned out to be the better bet and a guy who deserves more money. And, you know, given the news about Jack Eichel today with his herniated disc in the neck area out for the season, what do you make of that?
Well, that is a spicy take. And, I mean, you know, statistically, it's bearing fruit now. You know that NHL managers are always going to go with a centerman, right? And in this case, a very talented American centerman in Jack Eichel. I think this is a wise move by the Eichel camp. And I know that the Buffalo Sabres fully endorsed it. They know this season is over. Jack has been working with Sabres doctors and specialists from the injury point moving forward. And that's been on a weekly basis. I wasn't expecting that surgery was going to be an option or let alone required. That was a bit of a surprise to me. And I think that decision would have been made relatively suddenly, because even going into the deadline on Monday and talking to, you know, Sabres sources and those close to Eichel, things were trending in the right direction. He was starting to feel better. I mean, it seemed like a foregone conclusion that he'd return this year just because of the sensitivity of the issue. But the fact that surgery was acquired, I mean, that makes it more sketchy for me. But I say that, and all it does is, for now at least, it obviously parks the speculation of his future. You know, the importance of his health is priority one. But we're going to be talking about Jack Eichel's future as soon as the gong rings on the end of the Buffalo Sabres season at Game 56.
Because, absolutely.
Yeah, then you're. It almost feels like you can start the clock ticking, right? And there'll be tons of interest, as there probably should be. And I, you know, that's an enormous contract, but I think a healthy Jack Eichel in a different environment with a fresh start is going to be a motivated Jack Eichel. And I think he'll return to his star status.
Well, sticking with the Hazy B quiet takes, another one of them that we dug up last hour was that David Riddick should be using this as somewhat of a platform for an addition to the Maple Leafs, or for the Maple Leafs, because I think there's just as much of an opportunity of the Leafs saying thanks but no thanks to Freddie Anderson and him moving on, and them going with a tandem like Campbell and or Riddick. Could you see that being the case based on where this is going?
I think you absolutely could see that. You know, and look, we've probably said enough about the work that Kyle Dubas did leading up to the deadline and then through the deadline. He ticked all the boxes, right? You know, acquiring Foligno, getting the seventh D-man and Ben Hutton. Who knows? Maybe he works into that third pairing and is a better option than Travis Dermott. I don't know. Let's see how it plays out. But I think that was a shrewd move to make sure that they bolstered their crease for the obvious reasons. I mean, Freddie isn't going to be back until the end of the regular season, and then how sharp can he be at that point? And Jack Eichel, the question mark beside his health is starting to fade for me, but you can't erase it entirely. So it was just way too much of a gamble. So there's nothing but opportunity here for Riddick. And the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to have to make some real tough choices, big decisions. in the not too distant future, when you get into the off season, and guys, I can tell you, and nobody's going to be surprised by this, there are managers just salivating with the thought that Zach Hyman is going to become an unrestricted free agent. I doubt it happens because of his importance and value to the Maple Leafs, but they're going to have to buck up. They know that. Whatever that number is, it's going to be more than they're comfortable paying, but they're going to have to pay it. I feel like they're going to have to pay it. So maybe the insurance in the financial side comes from having Jack Campbell stay healthy, prove that he can be a number one, and Dave Riddick, in the limited time he has now with the Maple Leafs, proving that he can fit into their future plan as well.
Yep, I could see that all playing out. We've only got 12, 13 games to go before the real stuff starts. We look forward to it. Great stuff, buddy, as always. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this. Okay.
You bet, guys. Have a great night.
There's Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. Lots of information there in terms of where the Leafs are at, Vancouver's at. The Leafs are they got a lot of games coming up in a short period of time, right? Like, they've had their breaks, and now it's almost every other night they're going. Jays, same situation. They walked off the Yankees today, took 2 of 3 over New York. That's 4 out of 6 against the Yankees to start the year. They're in Kansas City for 4 starting tomorrow night. Steve Phillips will join us. We'll get into the baseball scene with him next. Raptors back in action tonight. You can hear that game right here on TSN Radio. San Antonio is in town, and they're fighting for something. They're a 500 club. They're currently in the 9th hole in the Western Conference. So as of now, they're involved in the play-in round and likely to get in there, likely to stick around. I think they're a 5-point favorite going into the game tonight. And it's all about load management for the Raptors. Dignified tank. Lowry will be out tonight.
Yes, indeed.
Van Vliet is out tonight. Gary Trent Jr. all of a sudden. Something's flared up. He can't go, so he won't play.
And
he can't play. And Ken Burch will make his debut as a starter tonight. You know, he played last night, but we'll see.
They got one guard tonight, Hayes. They got Malachi Flynn is their only discernible NBA guard. How about that?
That's, I think, perfect. It's actually perfect for the scenario because, as I've been saying, I have no interest in them winning games. As awful as that sounds, lose out, but silver linings, play a kid like that. Play him 40 minutes tonight. Play him.
He will.
Absolutely. Play him. Play him 40 minutes tonight. See what he's got, you know. And that, I think, is all you can really take out of the final, whatever it is, 18 games of the season, because you're on a death march, effectively. You know, you're just trying to get to the end. You know where you are. You know what you're doing. And try to give yourself the best possible opportunity at winning the lottery. That's in their best interest. Big picture. So that game coming up tonight on TSN Radio. The Jays are probably in the air. They're on the way to Kansas City. They'll take on the Royals for 4 starting tomorrow night. They took 2 of 3 against the Yankees today. Bo Bichette walking off with an opposite field home run, the second of the game for Bo. He's coming alive. He's feeling good. And to chat about it, we're joined now by our TSN 1050 MLB and Blue Jay analyst, Steve Phillips. Bo said after the game, Steve, he feels like he's coming on. I would say that that's probably an accurate statement right now.
Oh, no question about that. I think he's getting locked in right now. Got the batting average up to .327, the power production there. And for good young hitters, when they're driving the ball opposite field, it means that they're not spinning off the ball, that their timing's right. They're letting the pitch travel deep in the zone. They've got their pitch recognition working. And so, he's got it all going on right now. I mean, 3 hits in the game, 2 home runs, the walk-off win. And coming through in the clutch, you know, all of the things that he has led us to believe that he will be for the Blue Jays, he was in this series, and it looked like it's starting to come on right now. And here's the thing, like, he's swinging the bat, Vlad Jr. is swinging the bat, but, you know, Semien's been, he's been a solid player, he's come up with some big hits, but he's not quite as good as he's going to be. Biggio's not where he's going to be. Gurriel's not where he's going to be. And so there's still room for improvement offensively for this team. You know, Kirk looks like, you know, got the home run today, and maybe he's starting to come around. And so there's room to grow offensively for this team, and they're going to need it with their pitching staff.
Yeah, the offense is always going to get there. It will get there. It's just a matter of time. But, you know, a big part of what was supposed to lead the spark was George Springer. And Charlie Montoyo said today, effectively, we're not holding our breath anytime soon. Like, he's not even on the trip. They're about to go on a 10-day trip, I believe. Kansas City through Boston through Tampa. He's not going to be a part of it. So how do you read between the lines in terms of what's going on with Springer and the likelihood of him, you know, returning to form and getting back with the team anytime soon?
So I'm not surprised he's not leaving with the team on the trip. because, you know, he's going to stay behind where he can get at bats once he's ready to do that. Now, you know, he took batting practice for the first time, but, you know, we're really going back to starting spring training almost over for him, you know, where he's missed so many weeks. I mean, it'll be ultimately 3 weeks or so before he's had it at bat. And so I think that he's taken a step back. He'll stay in the alternate camp. They'll get him 20 at bats a day there and try to, when he's ready to go, and try to, you know, and again, now they got to be careful not to overdo it where he's running the bases and overexerting himself to where he's going to strain something else. But I, you know, it makes sense to me. You leave him behind. He doesn't start with the team. You start to get him in shape and get the leg healthy, get the bat swing ready, and then have him join whenever that may be. And it may not be at all for this road trip. They've got to make sure that it's healthy because, an example, you look at the quad injury. Lorenzo Cain of the Milwaukee Brewers had a quad injury that he limped into the season with, and now they've just put him on the injured list now because it lingered, it didn't go away, and he now may have a setback where it's going to take more time to come back.
Hey, Steve. You know, obviously you see Vladdy doing some really tantalizing things. You know, Hayes was pointing out that Bo Bichette is now tied with Joe DiMaggio for the most extra base hits through his first 87 games of a major league career, which makes you think, man, this kid could be something. Is it too early to start talking about both of these guys in the conversation around a long-term deal, the kind that we saw, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. sign, 14-year, $330 million, Acuna sign with Alex Anthopoulos and the Braves for a similar number? When do we get around to talking about that with the Blue Jays?
Well, I think we're there. And, you know, those could have started. And quite honestly, you might have gotten a better deal if you had done it yesterday instead of tomorrow. After, you know, I mean, like those, these two guys are only going to keep getting better, which in their mind means the number's going to go up. Now, you know, any expectation that deals will match what the Braves did with Acuna and Albies, I think they're going to want more than those. Those guys were in different circumstances, not son of big leaguers, and so they wanted that big payday. These guys aren't really wanting for anything. They know they're going to be around for a while, but it still makes sense, and I think it makes sense for them, and it makes sense for the organization. So I would jump into it and understand that what you want the deal to be and what the deal's going to be are not going to be the same. It's going to be more than what you want to do, but it's also going to save you money in the long run. You just don't know it yet. And so I think that the teams – these are guys that you're willing to take a chance on, because what you do know is at their worst, they're going to be productive, solid major league players. At their best, they're mm-hmm. perennial all-stars. Find a number in between where you can make a deal and get on with it.
With Steve Phillips, our Jays analyst, you mentioned how with the bats coming alive, they're going to need it because of what's going on with the arms right now. Rio has made three starts. He's looked outstanding. Actually, Matz has looked very good through two starts. He'll start maybe tomorrow night, probably not, likely on Friday in Kansas City. But you've got Ross Stripling, who is now on the IL. Julian Merriweather has spent his career on the IL. He's back on it now. You still have Pearson on there. You still got Hatch on there. Kirby Yates never got to the season because he had Tommy John. So it was thin to begin with in terms of talent, in terms of upside, and they're really running into it. So how do you see this playing out? You know, we talked about it before the season started. Do Atkins and Shapiro potentially get proactive here and look in the trade market, whatever it might be, to try to make something happen, maybe push someone's timeline a little bit further ahead than they wanted it to be because you're in win now mode? What do they do considering all the injury problems, and inevitably they're going to run into some issues here based on their arms?
Yeah, so I think they're going to slow play it a little bit. If anybody's available before Memorial Day, it's somebody who's not performing well that a team wants to move. Because otherwise, they're going to hold them. They know that if they're pitching well, there's always going to be a market for that guy at some point. And so why not win some games, sell some tickets for your own fans before you start to trade them? So anybody that's available before Memorial Day is somebody who's underperforming that you think you're going to fix. I had a chance to interview Steven Matz this morning. He really talked. I mean, he first of all, he raved about the Blue Jays organization. And, you know, he's only known the Mets. And so we talked a lot about how the change of scenery and what it has meant for him. And, you know, what ends up happening is that every interaction, every good start, every bad start, you know, he's a guy that had a lot of peaks and valleys with the Mets, where he looked great on days, and then he looked like he couldn't get anybody out. And what happens was, when he was pitching well, as time went on, when something went wrong, everybody assumed it was beginning of the end again, and that, you know, should we take him out of the rotation? And so he got a completely fresh new slate with no labels, no baggage, and he is relishing that. And analytically, he feels he's got a lot more information out of Toronto than he did with the Mets. So it's really telling. I think that he's figuring it out. That's a good thing. Robbie Ray, I thought, looked pretty good his first time out. I thought that, you know, not a bad outing for him. He threw some strikes, which I was happy with. And he wasn't looking like he was trying to max out the velocity of his fastball, and that location mattered more to him. And then Pearson coming back is going to be critical. So I think they're going to slow play it. What they have proven, the Jays, is that they've got a really good bullpen. And a lot of names that the rest of the world may not know, but they're very capable guys. And so I think they're going to just, you know, get into the season a little bit. There's no reason to panic now. You know, listen, the Red Sox lost three in a row and looked like they were never going to win a game for the first series and losing to Baltimore. They won 8 games in a row right now.
Right.
I mean, they're playing, you know, but I don't believe in them. Everybody else is, you know, 4-5, 5-5. And so, you know, I think they're going to get into it. The good signs are Ryu looks really good. Matt looks really good. Ray looks like not a bad first outing for him. The bullpen's solid. The offense starting to come around. So I see more good than bad. And they're going to have to keep an eye on the pitching. And if somebody does become available, there'll be players on them. But I don't think they should force their hand right now. And they should really sort of get into the season and see where they're going.
With Steve Phillips. So there was a play in the first inning earlier this afternoon. Bichette slid into first. It was somewhat of a judgment call. And the review process was outrageous. I mean, I've had this conversation with you before, Steve. I hate review in any sport. It bothers me. I find that it wastes too much time, and then generally it comes back. It's a judgment call anyway, and they still get it wrong half the time based on subjectivity. So what are we wasting our time for? We're just trying to appease the fact that we care more, but it ultimately doesn't even get the job done that it's supposed to. But today was egregious in nature. There was a miscommunication between the ump and Boone, and he made sure that Aaron Boone got what he wanted and kept going back to the dugout. Do you want to review it? Do you not want to review it? It's ridiculous. It's got to stop. I'm not saying they're going to throw out review because I don't like it, but this idea that you sit there as, you know, just a pawn waiting for the manager to discuss with his people what he wants to do, that's so easy to change. And I don't see why baseball doesn't. Like, they got to put a clock on this. What do you make of it?
Well, so there is a clock on the manager to make a decision, and he's got to decide within 30 seconds that whether he wants to review or not. And then, you know, the average time for a review this year so far is 1:24. Now, we've had a few longer ones, the one in Atlanta, obviously, which was a debacle, where everybody in the world except the guy in the studio in New York, you know, thought that Bohm didn't touch the plate in that game. So I'm a big fan and proponent of replay. And here's why. Because as a general manager, I know what it takes to put a team together and how much work it is. And what I want the ultimate result to be, and I don't care about how much time it takes or anything else, I want the result of what actually happened on the field to be the result for the outcome of my team. And even if it means that a review takes a win away from me, I'm more than willing to live with that, but I can't stomach the notion that I'm going to lose a game that was based upon human error where we could have reviewed it. Now, I think there are some tweaks that need to be done with the system. I think that having people who are just that aren't umpires in reviewing it is important, because I think there is some element where, let's put it this way, I don't know if there's a conflict of interest where umpires don't want to call out other umpires for mistakes, but I want to remove that consideration at all. I don't want there to be that notion. And ideally, it would be great if the review was the review made the ultimate call, not caring what call was made on the field. This notion of, you know, we can't confirm it, but it's upheld. Even if the umpire says, well, I think he's probably safe. I know the umpire called him out, but there's not enough evidence, but I think he's safe, but I can't change it. No, I want the guy who has five different camera angles in slow motion to make the ultimate decision over the guy on the field who I think is, you know, bang, bang, play. You're not going to get him right. There's no shame in that. I want the call right. And they've got to add other elements to review. The hit by pitch by Conforto should have been reviewable. You know, that it was a strike. I mean, yes, if the hit by pitch can be reviewed. We all knew he got hit by the pitch, but it was a strike. And it was to me, it was a rule violation on that one. So I don't know. I think we have to have it. And I cringe every time there's a mistake because those that hate it, it's fodder for them, right? To go down that road. And I just hope we never get rid of it because I want to win the games I'm supposed to win, even if I lose the games I'm supposed to lose.
Well, there's a few things that I would respond with. One, the sport was around for about 120 years and did pretty well before it. So I don't think we need to
Yeah, but think about how many mistakes were made.
But it was still a great sport. It was thoroughly entertaining. Yeah. Like, I'm not surprised you have that viewpoint because you just said as a GM.
Right.
We call them fans. What they are is they're customers. This is a business. It's not about the GM making sure he gets what he wants. It's about the fan watching and liking the sport.
If you're a fan of the Blue Jays, how do you feel about the Bichette call? How would you feel that a call that's a bang-bang play and the guy's called out and the video shows that he's safe and it costs you the game to go to the playoffs? As a fan, you're going to be okay with that?
Well,
no.
Steve, game 12 in the first inning, I don't think is what was going to cause them to make or break the playoffs. That's another straw man, just as much as the one you just applied.
If you lose one game because of the not getting the call right, and you don't get to the playoffs by one game, that 12th game of the season is the decide. They're all
guess
equal.
What though, Steve? There's probably a good chance it went my way some other time because of this exact system. So you're right. Maybe that one time where if we reviewed it, I should have got it my way. 10 games from now, I'll get it when I shouldn't have. Like, it's all good. It generally just balances out.
And
that's the way it usually plays out.
Everybody says it. I never experienced it that way. Do you know that we've had each year, we have somewhere between 650 and 700 calls overturned in a season? Think about the history of baseball where we glorify the past. But what actually happened on the field and how did it play out? Now, maybe we don't care, but the reality is 700 mistakes made every year by umpires on calls. Those are the ones that are overturned, and they probably still get some wrong that should have been overturned.
Of course.
And to me, that changes the whole outcome of seasons, and it's worth the extra time. Again, even from a fan's perspective, I don't want my team to lose because of human error.
I think you're expecting fans to have the same passion as the GM, as the manager. And the fact is, some of them are. I don't know what the percentage is. The diehards that are there for every pitch, every inning, a lot of them are like, I don't have 3.5 hours, 4 hours, what have you. But the point I'm trying to make, I guess, is that half the time, even with the review, they still get it wrong. It's still subjective. It's still the other team's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? But with that being the case, I'm assuming then, are you a proponent of robotic umpires? Have you been
absolutely, 100%. Oh my gosh, absolutely. The number of pitches that get missed, that 1-1 pitch, that if my team's at the plate, that 1-1 pitch that's out of the zone that an umpire calls a strike can completely turn a game around. That 3-1 pitch that an umpire calls a strike with the bases loaded, it should have been ball four, it changes the outcome of games. I want what actually happens on the field to be the notion that, oh, the beauty of the game is human error. No, it's what's wrong about the game is that we get it wrong and that the result on the field isn't often, always the result and the outcome of the game. So I'm 100% in there for automated umpires. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I think that's going to happen someday. I am not. This will not shock you, Steve, but I'm not. I like the character of the game. I like, as a fan, again, I like the fact that I can yell at an ump. Imagine going to a game and you're yelling at an iPad. But it takes away such a massive element of the experience, and I think that's what gets lost here. And this is the thing about the sport. All analytically driven, all the science, all perfection, And it's like, where's the humanity in that? Where's the fun? Where's the character? I think that's being lost.
I think the beauty of the game is in the talent of the players, not in the errors of the umpires.
It's a part of it. Well, the umps get it right, too. I mean, let's not pretend like
they have a really tough job. They do a great job. But when it comes to balls and strikes, during the course of a game, it can completely pivot the game with a bad call by an umpire and a ball and a strike.
Absolutely. And it's great fodder for a guy like me. Because at 4 o'clock, I'm steaming, Steve, and I will miss that if it's a robotic umpire. That's all that ultimately matters in the end. Anyway, we'll leave it there.
Get off my lawn. Get off my lawn, kid.
I know. We'll believe me. We'll get into this more often as we go forward. I'm sure of it. Thank you, Steve. We'll do it again soon.
My pleasure, as always, guys.
There's Steve Phillips, our TSN Jays analyst. Go ahead, Dave. I'm sure you want to respond to that.
Well, no, it's a great debate, and I'm sort of falling in somewhere in the middle. I'm actually for robo umpires, but I think you'll be steaming when the guys on Team Corsi miscalibrate the robot, right? That's
right,
it'll
exactly.
Just be somebody else to yell at, right?
Yeah.
It won't be the guy in the chest protector that you're yelling at. It's the guys in the pocket protectors.
Listen, I understand it's not perfect. Of course it's not. There's a lot of umpires that are terrible at times, and their strike zones are constantly moving around. They'll move from pitch to pitch. Forget game to game or inning to inning. But for me, I'm about the experience. I'm not in it to win it based on my paycheck. You know, like, I get it from Steve's standpoint. He's not alone. I'll bet you every GM thinks the exact same. Like, you live at it from that standpoint. I want it perfect. I don't care if it's a six-hour game. This is my game. This is my livelihood. I look at it as what is the most fun, what's the most entertaining, the characters that come with it, the interactions that come with it, the water cooler material. Can you believe that call? Can you believe that? Imagine taking that out. Like, I think that's a bridge too far, and I think we'd regret it. I really do. I think even people, a lot of people that push for robotic umps will get a year or two into it and say, pretty stale game.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
Nah, I don't know. I think it's a stale game. I think it's a stale game for a lot of the reasons you laid out, the analytical movement, the three true outcomes, everybody just trying to get a home run or they're striking out and too few balls in play and not enough strategy anymore. Nobody's hitting and running or stealing or bunting. It's all just about, the big bomb. And, that's the problem, I think. And the other problem is the games are too long. And that's why I'm on your side on the replay. Like, I don't like this a minute 23. Overturning calls. That's too long. It doesn't need to be that long. It's got to go.
Got to go quick, especially first inning today. Like, come on. First inning, let's go. We'll tee up the Raptor game, look back on a busy afternoon. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. So thanks again to Nick Foligno for joining us. Ray was great today. Dregs was great. Steve Phillips was great. Steve was wrong in a lot of ways, but he was great.
Wow. And
that's what we appreciate.
That was a nice back and forth, a little fire between Hayes and Phillips.
Needed one of those.
Loved it.
Been a while. Yep. Steve's
good.
Great, man. We'll get him back on next week. That'll come up all year. I mean, missed calls, made calls. It goes around, comes around, generally speaking, but in the end, the Jays are 500. They're off to Kansas City. They walked off against the Yankees today. Jays, they're in a decent spot. They're in a pretty good spot. The Leafs are in a good spot. The Raptors are not in a great spot, but they're back in action tonight against San Antonio. And Fred won't play. Lowry.
What do you mean
play.
Not in a great spot? What do you mean not in a great spot? One game out of the fifth draft slot, man.
That's
the
good
fifth
point.
Lottery spot.
Yep, that's what needs to be.
They're tanking, baby.
Yep, tank.
Dignified tank.
Dignified tank. That's exactly what's happening. So we'll see what comes out of that tonight. That game coming up next on TSN Radio, and we'll break it down tomorrow. Great stuff, Dave. Thank you for doing this, buddy.
Good seeing you, Hayes.
There he is, Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We are back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.